Hey guys, on this episode of Atomic Moms, we have the boys of Undateable, Rick Glassman, David Finn, Ron Funches, and also my husband is in studio. Oh wait, not studio, it's my dressing room.
At Warner Brothers, and we've got the girls here too, Sabrina and Magnolia.
Say hey!
Oh, okay. Listen to this episode, it's amazing. Also, don't forget Facebook, Instagram. What do all the kids do today? Twitter and comment and like on iTunes.
Hey guys, welcome.
Welcome.
We are actually in my dressing room right now
at Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers. We're doing a little Atomic Moms on the run here. You know, as we've talked about before, the schedule gets a little crazy.
And we're in the dressing room. Bianca has blackout curtains so that little Magnolia can nap in here.
There's a big cube of a cubed ball pit.
Yeah.
Toys. There's all sorts of why are you that? And also we have my husband, Mike Catherwood, with us.
Yeah, hi everybody.
Aww. He's actually co-starring in this episode of Undateable. He plays a love interest for Leslie, which is really exciting.
I wouldn't say I'm co-starring. I'm featured.
No, you're a co-star.
Okay.
This will be so good. And when it comes out, we will be putting it up on Facebook and Instagram and everything, so you can see how cute
it'll be really
they
fun.
Are together.
And we're super excited about today because we have a couple of the boys from Undateable stopping in. Give us some of them are dads, some of them are one of them is a dad, and two of them are not, and they're gonna kind of give us their take
it's,
on
Ron Funches,
yes, and Rick Glassman and David Finn. So let's get started.
And I apologize for my voice; it's a little scratchy. I caught something my daughter had, but it's super sexy, right?
Right.
Hey guys, we're back with Ron Funches now from Undateable. Are you the biggest winner of At Midnight?
Yes. I'm the best.
You are the best. And did you win like an alternative comic of the year award last year or something?
I feel like you're adjusting that mic without knowing whether it needs it or not.
Mike was adjusting
in my
the mic.
I could see the producers over there. They're like,
get closer.
It was my radio intuition.
Ron, we are so excited to be speaking with you because you are the daddy on the show. How old is your son?
He's 11.
And is he in Portland?
He's in Salem, Oregon, outside of Portland.
And his name is Malcolm.
It is.
And you are such an amazing dad. Whenever I see your Instagram posts when he's in town. I haven't met him yet. Is he ever going to get to come to set?
I don't know. Like, he usually, like, I like to just, when he's here, we're just hanging out. So I don't want to be like, oh, we're here, but I'm also working and you're not going to see me for, like, all day. So,
that's a good dad thing to do. I think I would be like, Sabrina, watch your mother on the stage. Watch me do my thing.
So when he comes to town, we're usually just going to amusement parks or just sitting and playing Legos. So I try to just not have, either I'm working or I'm with him. Like I'm either focused on work or I'm focused with him.
Right. I have a question for you. It's something that I've actually thought to ask you even before you sat down to do our podcast.
Because we're professionals and we come up with our questions before.
Yeah. Well, no, because one thing that people may not know about Ron is he's like this Zen Buddha. And he just like his kind of outlook on life is very... You just always take, I think, kind of a peace and love approach, unless the line has really been crossed. And then even then, you let people know. But you're also, you're just a big kid yourself, and you love to,
Yeah, I love playing video games. I love comic books. I love just being childish and telling jokes and pulling pranks. So it's fun. It becomes, you know, me and my son, he's like my best buddy, so it's like, it's just fun to have a buddy who wants to play games with you, and I can show him the games that I used to like, and he shows me new things, and it's just real fun. I should probably be more of a disciplinarian.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to ask you is what happens. I mean, have you had a circumstance where you've had to discipline him?
And, yeah, of course.
And what? And how is that for you? Like, where does that line kind of? Where is that line drawn in terms of? Because it seems when I ever talk to you or see pictures, like you guys are best buddies, and you go and do a lot of. You have similar interests. You love to do the same things together. Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of get out of being the kid and being the dad when you need to like lay down the law? What does that look like for you?
I mean, it's just about his attitude. Usually, like, I mean, as long as we're having fun and things are appropriate, I don't have a problem with anything. You know, he also has autism, and sometimes his speech has been a little limited, so, like, he'll curse every now and then, and I'm like, I never try to put a kibosh on that, because I'm always like, oh, you, like, didn't talk, so if you feel like this is how you want to express yourself, I'm not going to limit you, but, it, you know, if there's times and places where he's just being a brat or something,
right,
and it's just kind of, like, time to sit him down, and I usually do it with, because I know that, I think it's helpful that I know the things he loves, and I know what he likes, and so it's like, well, if you're going to act like this, I'm going to have to take this away. And,
right.
And that's usually what gets him, and so he's like, no, no, no.
That works.
I'll be okay, I'll be good, I'll be good, and then he's just real reasonable. He just, you know, has fits every now and then, and we just try to handle it without any type of physical harm.
Has there been a practical joke or like a prank that the two of you guys have done together?
He likes to pull pranks. He likes to hide things. He likes to hide food in places.
What? Like what? Give me one instance. That sounds so, I imagine like a cat.
Cheese,
and
like,
cheese?
Cheese and, like, oh, he'll put it in a drawer and then you'll find it 6 months later.
I had string cheese in my pocket because I'll give Sabrina little bits of it.
Yeah.
And I accidentally put it in the washing machine in the dryer. So I had grilled cheese.
Oh my God. When I was growing up, there was this book series called The Babysitter's Club, and I
was obsessed.
Remember? Yes, and there was a character, Claudia, and I remember as a kid,
she's the fashionable one.
Yes, and she, do you remember what else? She also had candy hidden all throughout her room. So whenever the Babysitter's Club met at her house, she would pull these bags of candies out from like under the bed and in the bookshelf. And I remember I went out and saved up my allowance, and I bought a ton of candy, and I hid it in my room, and I thought it was so cool, but the thing with Claudia is it seemed to last much longer. For me, it was gone in like one day.
You found your, it's like your own Easter egg hunt. And
yeah. So about how much time does he spend equally with, between you and your ex-wife?
I mean, he spends the majority of time with her. He's here for the summer, so he'll be here for like 2 months in the summer. And then just whenever I have time off, that it's been hard to... That's been probably the hardest part about this job lately, is that I have to have a little bit of, like, when our hiatuses change, I have to have a little bit of know whether I'm going to get him or not.
And so, right.
And he's always like, you know, I want to come in February, or I want to come in then. And I'm always like, well, I got to schedule it to whatever is works with this show. So that's been the hardest part, because then sometimes I just miss him.
And yeah. Then,
so I'm getting him for this weekend. So that should be fun. But, you know, so I'd say he's here like every 2 months for a week, 2 weeks, and then he's here for the summer for 2 months. And then I go and visit him and we just hang out. It's fun.
What, now he was born before you started doing stand-up, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what do you, how do you think having, well, so you can't say because you weren't a comic before, you were in your heart, but before like doing, actually professionally being paid to do it, how does having a child, you think, influence your comedy? Do you find that?
Yeah, it's just motivating.
Yeah.
A thing of, I didn't care. I was just chilling, taking gravity bone hits and dirty mattress. So I was like, I guess this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And then I found out I was going to be a father. And it was just like, oh, I better get it together somehow. So I got a job at a bank for a while. And
you worked at a bank?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like not like a bank, a bank call center. So people call me and get mad at me for their money not being there. And I had like 401k and I was pretty good at it. I hated it. And then once I found out that he had autism, it was kind of like, oh, I'm going to need to make a lot of money. And I was like, oh, I could, this job's a trap because they're paying me like way more than minimum wage, but I don't get any experience besides this banking industry. So I'm either going to be stuck here or... Be like, oh, I can't go back to minimum wage, or I'm going to have to go do something. And I knew I didn't want to go to school for anything because I'd never been interested in anything.
Right.
And I knew I wanted to do comedy. And so I was like, well, I might as well. Now or never.
How old was your son when you guys diagnosed him?
He was
2 years old.
Yeah. just pretty early. We just thought he was deaf. I mean, that's the scariest part, is that when we're like, oh, he doesn't sleep. He doesn't sleep at all. Sleeps from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. every day. And that was rough, because then I still had to go to work. And he was like, I don't know what's wrong with him. And that was terrifying. So once he got diagnosed, at least we knew what it was. So that was like, oh, okay. Well, you're just different.
And did you guys then obviously take a different approach with schooling, or I mean, what does that entail? When
I mean, it's just a lot of therapies. Like, he's just been in school since he was two.
Yeah.
So like, and then now he's homeschooled, and it's just, you know, it's mostly just dealing with other people who don't understand what it's like, because they don't get it when like a kid's screeching, or he likes to hop a lot, and you got to deal with a lot of neighbors and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where the money comes in, because I need to get a house.
Yeah.
I can't have a landlord, because they will kick us out.
Is that legal?
No, probably not, but they get, you know, you don't that type of environment where you're like, oh, call you. And I just want to be like, look, you can come over here every day. But this is going to keep happening. And I'm not going to yell at him and cause our relationship to get weird because you don't understand.
Right.
I'm sorry that this is inconveniencing other people. I truly am. But, like, that's what I do at a hotel. So, like, if I know I'm going to a hotel, I'm just like, you need to put us away from other people because he's going to be loud and we're going to have a good time. And that's just about it.
Do you find that you are more disappointed in adults reactions or misunderstanding of your son and his condition, or other children?
Mostly adults, because kids tend to usually either kind of pick up on it right away and adjust, or they just are oblivious to it and they're just like, oh, it's just another friend of mine, and he sometimes doesn't talk a lot and he's just hanging out. And it's always, you know, adults are that. That's usually how I judge a lot of adults, actually, is how they talk to him. Because a lot of people will either ignore him, like he's not there, or try to talk to him like he doesn't understand.
Right.
And so, you know, they belittle him. But if you just come in and you treat it like, hey, what's up? And when he doesn't answer you, you're just like, okay. You know? And like, and I go, oh, you're a cool person. You get it. You get it right away. You know, like, all right, he's just different. We're moving on. That's what I like.
Do you feel like, I mean, it's crazy because I've worked with you for a long time now, and I actually, Rick Glassman has just spotted, well, you're eating a little loudly right there. I saw Ellie's face and I know
I was like, really? We are like hearing the most beautiful thing ever, and I'm just not.
It's interesting because I actually didn't know your son was autistic until you just said it right now.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like with anything with kids, they're like, people get so uncomfortable to even just ask, to just say, like, if they notice something. I feel like there, it's this like line you can't cross where if you feel something's different, you don't want to offend people, you know? And I mean, it sounds like you would much rather somebody just flat out ask you, you know,
mind your own business. And it, usually if you're close enough to me and we are, I'll, you know, you'll know, and I'll let you know. I'll just be like, or if I'll read your face when he doesn't react to you, and I'll just be like, oh, he has autism, you know?
Right.
You know, it's not, no, I don't think the answer is to be like, oh, he had, you know, there's something wrong here. It's just, I mean, I can't, you know, sometimes I'll see kids in the street and then I know telltale movements or like things, and I'm just like, oh, autism.
Right.
Wow. That's fun, you know.
To spot it. When you decided to do stand up about autism, because it's amazing and everyone should look up your work with that, was there any anxiety about sharing it or joking about it, and like how did you figure out how to do it in a way that's like
I just always wanted to be honest, and I always felt like, I mean, this is a big part of my life, so I'm gonna talk about it. It's not like I'm the comedian, and all I talk about is, you know, my son and how kooky he is. It's like, that's not anything to do with it. It's just that this is my son. This is a part of our interactions. And so I bring it up and the things that I've noticed that are kind of weird about it and make it because he's, because it turns him, it cuts through all the BS and sometimes it makes him a jerk. And like, it's, and that's funny to me. And so I like talking about this little kid who's basically walking around the house like he, like, it's Genghis Khan. Just like, bring me this, bring me that. I mean, basically when he visits, like, I'm just his bacon butler. Like, I just bring him bacon and get out of his way. That's pretty much it.
And how do you know when that's the autism or he's just being a jerk? Oh, like all children are.
Oh, yeah, that's when the difference between when you're like, oh, you need to be punished. Yeah. Okay. Or are you just chilling?
Because Sabrina would love me to be her bacon butler. You know that from all the pictures you like on Instagram of Sabrina.
By the way, I smell a spinoff sitcom here. Ron Funches, the bacon butler.
The bacon butler.
I watch that nonstop.
But the most part was just, I mean, I was a little apprehensive, and I've gotten some... I remember one time a lady really hurt my feelings who was a comedian. Not a good one, but a comedian. And because she was just like, oh, that's great. That's a great new bit about your retarded kid. And I was just like, oh. Yeah, I was like that. And I wanted to punch her. But you don't do that.
Maybe you do.
So that hurt my feelings. And it actually stopped me from doing the joke for a little bit. Because I was like, is this what people hear when I'm saying it? But then I started to get feedback from people who had children with autism or had other members of their family, and they were like, I love it. I love how you talk about it. I can tell that you love your kid when you talk, and I can tell, and you talk about, you make fun of him because it's funny, and you can, but you still, you're not making fun of him because he's differently able. You're just making fun of him because of the things he did. And
yeah, it's your story. Yeah. It's your life,
and people related to that. And so I was like, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm gonna talk about.
You go first. I was just gonna say one thing, like, every time that I get to interact with you, Ron, I'm more and more impressed with you as a human being.
Ricky to leave.
Yeah, actually, so we might cut this little part out, but Rick Glassman came in here and he had an ice cream sandwich and like 7 napkins that he was crumbling up while Ron is telling us this beautiful story, and I just wanted to kill him. And I was like, okay, this is the OCD mom in me who's like, really, Rick, are you gonna make this about you right now? And luckily, I gave him like dagger eyes, and then I felt bad about it. And then Ron just turns and goes, hey, you need to leave.
Well, I think that's part of the thing about being on set here is like, we're with each other for many, many hours at a time. And you learn really quick how to just, I think that's one of the best things I've learned from Chris D'Elia is like, he just tells people like it is. Ron just tells people like it is, yeah. You know? And I'm always so worried about hurting people's feelings, but I was just going to say, when you interrupted me.
I'm worried about hurting your feelings now.
No. Is that, you know, working with stand-up comics has really helped me, and even as a parent, because you guys have to get up and you have to just go for what you're going for. And you can't think about, like, if you're going to hurt someone's feelings or if you're going to say something that somebody's going to take wrong. I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that, like, you know, this person did hurt your feelings. But I think as parents, like, I'm always so worried, like, what is this parent going to think if I'm doing this way? Mm-hmm. You know, it's rough because I think there is no larger kind of landscape of judgment than parenthood.
Well, then you're new at this, but you should know about lying. Lying is wonderful for these type of
yeah.
things. Because if you're going to tell, if you're, you know, you reach those parents and they're like, no, I'm doing this and we're doing this and we're doing this. And you're like, well, my kid doesn't want to do any of that. But you start feeling bad, right? And
yeah.
You're like, you just go, yeah, we too. We're doing, we go to a different place. But you're not doing any of that. Nobody needs to know. That's how I like to do it. The discretion is a big thing.
Okay, so how do you learn discretion for the people that have a podcast and overshare all the time? Like, how do we learn discretion? How do you keep the privacy? Because I'm sure people are, especially now with Undateable and everything else, like, are people just like on Twitter all the time with you and on Instagram? And I'm sure they're all commenting on, like, how do you even putting up photos of your kid on Instagram? Yeah. Does that become weird? Like,
sometimes just when the occasional person wants to be shocky and write something gross or something. But, you know, I'm just like, it's just an open window. And if, you know, somebody comes in and just delete, block, sees it. You know, and then you move on.
That's great.
I'm not going to stop me from... Because I don't even look at it like I'm posting for other people to see on Instagram. On Twitter, I am, but I usually am not talking much or posting pictures of my son on Twitter. But on Instagram, I legitimately am like, oh, I never keep a photo album. I want to have pictures of my son to go back and look at. Hopefully this website's still around.
We're all screwed. That's so great.
And I post pictures of my friends and my family, and I try to make funny captions, and I don't, I mean, if people write jerky things, I just get rid of them. But I'm not, that's always the thing. It's like that reaction, you do something and you get a reaction, and your thing is like, oh, I should change how I am. And it's just like, no, like, I'm going to be me. I'm going to do what I do. If I get that reaction, I'm going to take it, but I'm still going to be like, no, fuck you. I do what I do. You just shouldn't listen to me. You should go away. You don't have to listen to me. That's always my thing. Is like, you don't like me? So what? There's so many other avenues for you to go find people you do like. I'm not going to change. I think it's a big thing with my mom, probably, that came with, which is helpful. It's just, it was always, just do you. For, like, her first day of school, she was just like, hey, there's going to be kids that like you. There's going to be kids that don't. Those who like you for who you are, stick with them. Those who don't, fuck them. And go to school.
Oh, my God. I am going to put that, I'm going to, like, get a separate little tape recording of that, and I'm gonna listen to it every night. That's gonna be my new hypnotherapy.
Fall asleep. Ron, thank you so much for coming and talking with us and sharing so much with us. I think that you have a beautiful perspective on things, and, you know, look, I've just so enjoyed getting to know you on this set, and I'm so damn proud of you just as a person and a performer, because I do love you. Teach me a lot about sticking to my guns and being true to who I am, and that's amazing. So thank you
for coming in.
Thanks for having me. You guys are great.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with someone else.
Guys, we're going to be back with our guest in 2 seconds, but I just want to remind you to get on Facebook, write comments, like, do Instagram, Atomic Moms, Twitter, Atomic Moms, and go on iTunes, please, and subscribe and write awesome comments and star us. Thanks. Now we're back with our guest.
Hey guys, now we're here with Rick Klassman. He plays Bursky on Undateable, but he plays Rick
in Bursky on Undateable. I'm actually here to give you some news.
Announce your resignation.
I'm now going to be the Leslie character.
Oh, amazing. That's good, because I didn't feel like I was filling those shoes very well.
It'll be a body swap show, like Freaky Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Rick is now eating, he had an ice cream sandwich earlier, and now he's eating a turkey sandwich with cucumber. And it's funny, the thing that drives my mother more nuts than anything else on the planet is chewing, like the sound of chewing and eating. And I got
your
that
mom
from
or,
her.
Oh, yeah.
And I got it from her.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot handle it. Other people eating.
Can't handle judgmental observations. Isn't that interesting?
How he just... Yeah, it's not judgmental. It affects me deeply. You know, it's the mouth noises. I was sitting in a room full of with 40 other students taking the SATs, and I kept hearing this, just like what Rick's doing right now. And oh my God, I had to call the proctor over and like point the person out, and then the girl goes, it's my retainer. So I'm just saying, I know this is about me, but it's
when
a
I,
thing.
When I was pregnant, I almost killed Mike for doing such things as eating loudly and opening soda cans across the room. But noises were like, you know, I don't understand.
Opening soda cans across the room annoyed you?
Like,
where was he supposed to open a can?
And how many cans
garage?
Is he opening?
Yes, somewhere outside of the house.
The truth was, I wasn't supposed to. That's the answer, is that whatever I was doing, I wasn't supposed to be doing it.
Gotcha.
Adam chews when he crunches apples. Whenever we go to a hotel, he always grabs an apple from like the dirty apple bowl in the lobby that's really just supposed to be decoration, right?
No.
And he always crunches it so loudly. He's so cocky with his apple crunching. It drives me insane.
I've told him this.
It's true though, right?
I said there's something so arrogant about eating an apple outside of the house. Because we get it. We get it. You're healthy, you know? But eating an apple, there's nothing more of, hey, look what I'm eating than an apple. You know,
yeah.
You need to have a napkin, even though you don't really.
There's like juice dribbling down the side.
The crackle of biting into it.
But it's always the dirty hotel apples.
Yeah.
Because he eats apples.
That's true.
And that's a metaphor for how he treats his body, but.
Rick.
And his name is Adam. Isn't the apple? I don't know.
Adam's apple. Yeah, that's what you're thinking.
Oh, Adam's apple. I was thinking like the fruit, the tree. I don't know.
Your girlfriend is just texting you. Woo, is it serious?
I don't know. Should I look it up on TMZ?
I heard that you are now going to be Leslie.
Rick, you are not a parent yet. But what I do want to talk to you about is you have an amazing relationship with your mom and your dad. You have a great relationship with both your parents. And so great, in fact, that you take her places where most people would be like, I'm not going to be here with my mom.
That's not because I'm this amazing son. It's just because my mom makes me look good, you know?
Because she boasts about you and is your...
Yeah, she's very complimentary. But no, she's just a fun energy and it gives me a good energy. You know, when you're around someone who's dancing, you want to dance. She doesn't necessarily dance, but like I dance when I'm around her, you know? Like she's just
fun.
That's
the best.
No, people love her. She's cute. She says what's on her mind, and also, luckily, what's on her mind is always like beautiful, sweet things. And she's like, she has a way of complimenting people where it's like an observation, not like a kiss ass or flattery. So it's like, that's, you just like, you know, look great today. And it's like, yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah.
You know? It's like,
and she does have like really, really fun energy. You feel like she is, you know, still 16 years old. And
she reminds me.
And can go all night. Yeah.
I feel like I'm 16 is what she always says. I say, relax. I'm my girlfriend because of my mom. When I was at home for Thanksgiving, Tori, my girlfriend now, I didn't know who she was, but she came up as a recommendation on Twitter. And she has a lot.
And what's her last name? People are wondering. Listeners are wondering.
Tori DeVito.
Okay.
And I don't... she has a lot of followers, so I didn't think she would see me. So just to be silly, I started tweeting at my mom. I said, they tagged my mom. I have a huge crush on it. Tori, what should I do? My mom says, tell her you're tall, dark, and handsome. I said, Mom, I can't tell her that. She's got to discover this on her own, or someone she knows and trusts has to recommend me. We had this conversation back and forth, and Tori ended up seeing it. And then she sent me a message. And then I was sick and restarting work that week. So I said, I'm sick and restarting work this week. Let's meet up next week. And I wanted to, I missed her. Like, I liked her. I was sent her a video. She sent me videos. We're being cute as shit. Cute as, can I say shit?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we were being very cute and shit. And we had FaceTime dates. And before we met, we had like 30 hours. Like, sometimes on work nights, I stayed up until 5 in the morning. Like, we've been dating for months and I was out of town for a few days. Just talking. So we met and we'd already talked for so long. So, like, by the first date, I asked if she'd convert, which I was being kind of cute, but I also very, very much meant that. You usually wait a week or two. She will. And
will you raise your children Jewish?
Yeah.
Obviously, if she's going to convert. Okay.
Yeah. It's not even a religious thing. It's a tradition thing. You know, I want my wife to know the stuff about the heritage because I don't know anything. And I want her to remind me when and what I'm supposed to light and what I'm not allowed to eat. And I want the kids to like have like temple humor. And then when they're 13, we'll just never go back.
When you're dating a girl, is it more important? I mean, is like what she might be like as a mom, or those qualities that you think that would make a good mom? Does that even come up into your head at this point in the relationship?
I don't have strong relationships with anybody outside, including non-sexual relationships, if I don't think they'll be a good mom or dad.
Really?
Because I'm everyone's son. You know, aren't we everyone's son or daughter? The way Tori treats her dogs, I've noticed. Like, she goes home and she has to go home because she has to walk them and let them out. And it's not because those are the rules. Like, I know she, like, empathizes for these animals, or I guess sympathizes because she's never been a dog. but, like, she'll come in and she'll, like, you know, I missed you. And I'm like, oh, man, you're going to be a great mom. You're going to be a great Jewish mom. honestly, I think about that all the time. If fucking girlfriend won't stop texting me. Just leave me alone. Jesus. But you get it. You get it.
Like, you know what? She knows. She knows. She feels you talking about her right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was just doing that thing where it's like I'm speaking like I'm really sweet and then was being aggressive.
I know.
With stand-up, with your stand-up, too, like I feel like half the time like I'm laughing and I don't totally get it, but I'm laughing even though I don't totally understand it. Have you, wait, really fast. Yeah. Have you read, or I've listened to Steve Martin's Born Standing Up,
like his memoir.
Yeah, it's because he reads it on Audible.
No, I didn't read it. I listened to it.
You listened to it too? Did you?
I listened to it.
Did you listen to it?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, yeah. He reminded me so much of you. The whole thing, I just kept thinking, oh my God, this is Rick Glassman. And it's so amazing because I feel like you guys do a similar thing. I mean, he's my favorite, so you're my second favorite.
Yeah, but I do it different and better. But
no, I know you are different. You're different and you're completely unique, but he reminded me of you in a great way.
But anyway,
I find that believability is more important than anything else.
Of course.
So if you're going to tell a joke and the person knows you're joking, obviously it depends on the joke and what the structure you're telling, but if part of the joke is, a lot of times, and I don't think we realize this, we go through motions in jokes, and I even see this in writing and shows where it's just like, it's a device and everyone knows the device, so you just do the device and it doesn't matter if it's believable or not because, oh, I get what they're doing.
Right.
But what these jokes really are, especially if there's no direction and if it's real life, there's no camera on you, it's, could you imagine if, and then what it is? So if someone's trying to imagine if, commit, do it the way it would be. If I go and pretend to fart, it's like, I get it. Could you imagine if he farted? That would have been funny.
Right.
But instead of that would have been funny, if I make you actually think that I farted, and I'm using that for the hackiest, simplest example.
Or if you actually farted.
It's like, Jesus, he just farted at this graduation. That's crazy. Just do the actual
thing. But
people
don't laugh as hard because they're like worried about you. Like, don't
Why
you think
would anyone
sometimes
need to be worried about me?
Well, and here's the thing. I get it. I get why you guys do it. You guys are constantly on and constantly practicing. I'm just not used to that.
Sure.
I'm not, when I'm sitting on set and I'm talking, I just am having normal conversations and a joke flies out of nowhere and I'm unprepared for it. And the thing is that what happens is I feel it, like, because there's always a little bit of truth to it. It's a joke, but there has to be truth for it to actually be funny. And so I like immediately go, oh wait, and then I'm better about it because I'm first of all meditating, which is making me less reactive, but also I'm starting to understand and get that like you guys are joking pretty much 99.9% of the time. So I don't take it as much. But before, I'm so not used to people constantly saying things so direct and so real, and then I realize, oh my God, they were joking.
That's what makes you such a great mother, you know?
Here's a question. How do you get thick skin as a comic?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Tell our listeners, because
I
want thicker skin.
And that's what makes you a comedian, I think.
Okay, so how do you do it as a person?
Well, I think the first step, and I haven't articulated this to myself. I've never thought about it in this way, so I'm kind of figuring this out as I go, but I think the first step in this, and this is probably true with anything, is having an awareness, is to understand, like I said before, to understand intention is so important because then it's not about how you feel, it's about what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's almost a reflective way of looking at it or defensive, but that's what it is about. If someone calls you fat, it's not about you being fat because either that's a subjective thing and it doesn't matter, or you are or you aren't. So whatever they said doesn't make you fat or skinnier. It's what are they trying to do when they said that?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Are they trying to hurt you? And if so, why? Are they trying to be funny? And if so, was it? And just to be aware of like what you're hearing and what they're doing, and to know that it's just that. There's nothing more tangible about someone calling you fat than you being fat or not. None of that matters. If they didn't say it, it wouldn't have affected anything. So having an awareness, and I think that's kind of close to a confidence or knowing who you are, because it doesn't matter if someone calls you that. You know, if you've accepted that you're fat and someone calls you fat, you're going to say, yeah,
right.
I mean, I am fat. If someone calls you fat and you haven't accepted it and you're insecure about it, it's like, oh, don't call me that. But it's not them calling you fat.
Okay, so like what if somebody says to you, I'm just picking an example. Like what if you go and you do a show.
Your Junos is getting bigger every day.
No, something where you work really hard
into
at.
Into the mic, please. I feel like I've been getting, even in the dressing room, I'm getting more and more Jewish. And like the sweaters, I put on after two sweaters, I complain about how hot I am.
Come in with your bagel sandwich.
Yeah.
No, like what if somebody comes to your show and afterwards you hear them or they come up to you and they're like, you fucking suck, man. You're not funny at all.
Give it to me and I'll give you an honest response.
Okay.
Give me something specific.
Okay. So, like something specific about your show.
And who are you? It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Specific. Tell me who you are to me.
I'm a guy who came to your show.
Do I know you?
No, you don't know me.
Right.
I'm a stranger.
Go ahead.
I walk up to you after the show and I just say, say, like, I don't get it. I don't get what you do isn't funny. It's just rambling.
I understand what you're saying. That's why you don't get paid so much money to do what I'm doing. But thanks for coming watching me. Thanks for sitting for 4 hours and watching me perform.
And okay. Rick, what would you say a year ago or 2 years ago before Undateable?
That's about the intention. If someone is coming from a mean place,
I know, but you said,
bother me.
Right. I get that. But if you said the thing about that you make so much money doing it, what would you say when you weren't making so much money?
So if they saw me on stage, somewhere not making money?
Yeah, you're just doing stand-up around town and not making money. Like if you're at the beginning, you know, you believe that you're...
If I didn't think the set went well... I would say, I know, man, I'm getting better.
And if you thought the set did go well, what would you say?
Oh, I thought I did a good job, man.
I like that.
What about if it's somebody that you look up to, like like a fellow
like
comic,
Chris.
And you ask them and you say, hey, what did you think about that set? And they're like, it wasn't good.
First of all, Chris would never even watch me before. into the mic, laugh into the mic. So I don't know, man. I mean, these are such... if it was someone I looked up to, that would hurt me.
Right.
The whole point is, but if someone I can't imagine I would look up to someone who's that cruel, you know?
That's true.
Why would, and anyone I looked up to is good.
And they'd be a good
and
parent.
And anyone who's good would probably be a good father or mother. Yeah. No, but if anyone's good, a lot of times when people are coming from a hateful place, it's very much reflective. They're just being insecure. If someone says that that's not funny, it's because they're thinking, oh, I could do that, or I wish I could do that, whatever it is.
Right.
It's coming from an insecure place. People that have accomplished something and their self-worth isn't in... something that they want to be doing or don't think they could do well, they're not going to come from that place. Personally, in the most selfish way, I feel that way. If I had a bad set and I stay and watch other comics, I'm not laughing. It's not from a hateful thing. I'm just not in the mood to laugh. I feel everything sucks. I suck. This is shit. I'm done. If I crush, I'm laughing at everything. I'm just in the best mood. Oh, that's so funny. I get it because he's not wearing a hat and he said, hey, look at my hat. That's hilarious.
Right.
It's the mood I'm in.
Right.
So I don't know. But I know everyone on the show loves each other, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And I felt that way for real. Half of us knew each other before, but from the pilot, I felt we all loved each other.
Yeah.
You and I were getting coffees and salads at Gelson's on day two. So you have to already have that instinct of knowing what the intention is. And
right.
And it's trying to get a laugh and nothing more.
So maybe I'm very insecure and
I
just constantly think people are saying bad about me.
In the best way, but yeah, you're way too insecure. No, it makes sense. I mean,
do you think it's also
much.
Like a boy-girl thing a little bit? Because
yes.
Guys
yeah.
are, like, I feel like in elementary school.
Guys are great.
Yeah, because guys are just so much better than us. No, not at all. But just that was so crazy.
so insecure with the way you just said that.
The guys do, they are always ribbing on each other and stuff. And, like, I didn't have a bunch of brothers growing up that would, you know, pick on me and
boys
stuff.
Make
so
fun
I
of
never,
you, boys make fun of other boys in front of the boys. Girls make fun of other girls behind the girls' backs.
Yeah.
So you never develop
a
thick skin,
but
you develop out of... That's why girls are bitches and guys are assholes. Because you can't... It's like girls will be... And this is a very blanketed statement, but look at kids. When I say this, don't look at women and men. Look at 12-year-olds. Guys will push other guys down and say, your pants are stupid, you're fat. Girls say, oh, yeah, you're so pretty. Ugh, she's such a slut. You know what I mean?
And then
so
guys are always trying to get each other to laugh to impress the girls, right?
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, or to make themselves feel good. A lot of my... I've noticed that if I don't get a laugh someplace, even if I'm... And this is only because I'm so, so insecure. But if I don't get a laugh on something, it's like I feel like I accidentally just said the N-word. I couldn't get hotter. You know,
right.
I just like, oh, that wasn't funny. They probably think I'm the biggest loser. I need a laugh.
Do
so then I'll overcompensate.
That?
Yeah. Sometimes. Sometimes I'll notice if, like, I'm being funny and, like, I'm killing, and then say one thing that doesn't get a laugh, which who cares? Also, you don't need to get a laugh. Turn it off, Rick. You're obnoxious. It's like, oh, fuck. I shouldn't have made that laugh. I should have left 5 minutes ago.
Right. Isn't it annoying how all those laughs don't fill up the one non-laugh? Do you know what I'm saying?
That's what I was saying. It comes from a very insecure place.
Yeah.
I know. Rick,
that's what makes me a good father. Into the microphone, please.
There you
okay.
go. We love you for
thank
coming
you
and
so
stopping
much.
By
thanks
and taking
me.
The time.
Thank you,
and we can't wait to see you play Leslie on Undateable.
Are these going back to back? Like, are we going to hear the Ron one before this one?
No, not necessarily.
Okay, well, for those of you that did, do you notice how much of an asshole he was when he asked me to leave? He's like, I'm going to need to ask you to go now. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, just, hey, I get it. I obviously did something. There must be a little resent there. But relax.
But
I'm
see,
chewing a cookie
where,
loud.
You know, that's what was... He was in his moment. Like, he was doing his own thing. He was talking about his son and stuff. And so that's why it wasn't about you and your sandwich. It was about, like,
No, yeah,
he
absolutely
was in a good
was.
Space about what he was talking about. And
absolutely
you were distracting
was. It was absolutely
it.
About the relationship he has with me, 100%. Oh. Because if somebody else was chewing loud, he would say, "Hey, do you mind? I'm trying in the middle
oh,
of something."
Oh, but the way he said it to you. I
now,
agree.
I say this coming from a place of he's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And I love him. But fucking relax, bro. I get it. I come in. I'm chewing too loud. I'm sitting literally on his shoulder almost. Hey, Rick, not the right time. That's on me. I messed up. But if someone steps on your shoe, you don't call him an asshole. You say, excuse me.
Excuse me.
Thank
all right, Rick.
You, Rick.
Love you.
Bye.
The mic.
Appreciate it.
We'll be back. Okay, so we're here with David Finn. My
Hello.
Husband is laughing at me. David Finn he plays Brett on the show Undateable. He hails from London Town.
Ireland originally. I'll have to stop here.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know
my
that.
My dad will kill me if everyone thinks I was born in London.
Oh my gosh, that's
Irish,
so funny.
Irish.
How many years did you live in Ireland before you moved to London?
Three.
I feel like I had no idea, and that changes like all of what I think about you.
Why now? What do you think? Now you know he's Irish. Let's hear it.
Well, it makes
stereotypes.
It strains the drinking, makes you even dirtier.
Yeah.
More poetic.
Yeah.
Love she doesn't potatoes. Want to get on his bad side. Might punch her.
Yeah.
So I know we had a long day today, so we won't keep you too long, but we kind of want to talk
to
you.
It's also Friday in traffic.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Yes. Except that he lives literally 2 minutes down the street.
You know, we're going to keep you forever. Then, yeah. Now that you're on.
I live on stage 18.
So David, you are married.
I am.
How long have you been married?
I've been married for 2.5 years.
Awesome. And you do not have children yet.
I do not.
But and you moved to the States for Undateable.
Yes.
And so when you have children, are your family back east, way back east in London? Are they freaking out? How are they going to see their grandkids?
Well, Lauren's sister just had a baby recently. And it's kind of, it's the first grandchild in her family. So they're all kind of rallying around Lauren's sister. So I think, I think they're sad in that they might not be there to see the grandkids grow up as much as that. But, I've said to Lauren, we'll get your mum out for a month, for the first month, just to kind of set you off on the right road.
Yeah, you could also have a reality series since you're in LA, and then they could just see your child grow up in the reality series.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or make them a child actor, the boy or girl.
That's the plan.
Yes.
Yeah, athletes or actors.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, athletes become great actors, too.
Based on my history, they're definitely not going to be athletes. So.
Well, you don't know. They could be good at soccer. Football.
Rugby.
Football or rugby, yeah.
Yeah.
That really doesn't carry much weight in these parts.
No one cares about
rugby. Get the ball on the floor, real skill.
Okay, so, and you're thinking about kids in the near future. And
well, I mean, I think we've been so kind of overwhelmed with emigrating we didn't even decide to move here permanently until we got the second season.
Right.
Yes, we were here for the first season. We weren't sure. We were just going to kind of see how it goes, see if we liked the States. Luckily, we do very, very much.
Yay for us.
So we decided, second season, we'll kind of settle. And it's just kind of now the dust is settling only recently, and we're kind of starting to talk about it and making moves. Lauren's got a great baby lady. What do you call him?
OBGYN.
An OBGYN, yeah.
I like baby lady better.
I like baby lady, too.
Baby lady.
That, yeah.
We're going to trademark that.
What is, do you feel like there's one of you that's a little more ready than the other? Do you feel like you're both kind of on equal ground when it comes to the decision?
Well, I think I'm 3 or 4 years older than Lauren. So I'm age-wise, obviously older than her, but emotionally, definitely, she's way ahead of me. So I think we're probably on an even keel. I think we're both coming to it at the same time, I think,
It's a big deal. I mean, I know that, when Mike and I were thinking about doing it, Mike was certainly ready way before me. And then when I decided...
As is customary in the bedroom, I'm ready way before she is.
<And done>.
But yeah, I mean, because when you haven't had a child yet, and now even more after having a child, I realize like you have no idea what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I mean, life is so different from when we were single,
And David and I were just chit-chatting before we got started. You got to put into perspective how, he got married right before he got a job in the United States. You got to think about what a dramatic shift his life's taken already.
Yeah.
I mean, to probably... Mm-hmm. Regardless of how wet, ready
to throw
both
a
you guys
baby on that
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just settle into this
oh
one.
Oh my god!
First.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just enjoy brunch. Enjoy reading the newspaper on a Sunday morning.
Enjoy laying in bed and just watching movies or any TV whenever
that's
you
all
want.
Gone, is it? Just gone.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there's things, like there's in the beginning, in the very beginning, you can, you know, like Mike and I watched the whole entire five seasons of Game of Thrones.
I watched Broadchurch. It was so good.
David was in Game of Thrones.
I was in Game of Thrones.
That's right.
I won't.
You should have been in Broadchurch.
I'll never forget how goofy you and I were when it got to the scene where David, like.
Oh, because we were just huge fans by the time it got to your episode. Cool.
But I mean, like, it was really silly.
Well, I fart, I take a piss, and then I get my face ripped off and I'm dead by the credits.
It's a way to
that's
go.
That's how I always envisioned my life.
Kind of just rock and roll and
yeah,
then dead.
Just go hard.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you have any concerns? Are there any things that you're worried about raising a child in the States versus raising a child in...
Yeah, there's so many things. Like, you know, in the UK, we've got the NHS, so everything is just free.
Yeah.
In terms of medical bills and stuff like that. And here, it's just... We just haven't got a clue. Every time we call our insurance people, we're just like, okay, pretend that you're talking to an alien who's never heard of medical insurance, because we just have no idea.
Right.
So that's really daunting.
Yeah.
Because we have to learn the whole system, where you guys grow up with it and it just kind of goes in over time.
Yeah, but even growing up with it, you still are so confused.
I have no
idea. Every
ideas.
Time anything medical comes my way, I'm always like, wait.
Can you get in easily, though, over there? Like, pretty quickly?
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of book an appointment and you do
we
it.
Get
I mean,
in. Okay, we're moving.
People criticize the NHS in the UK, and you know, it's...
What's NHS stand for?
National Health Service.
No, that would make sense.
Pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
I don't know why they kept it complicated, but...
You know, people criticize it, and they're like, oh, you know, I was in the waiting room for 24 hours, or... And stuff does happen where it's kind of, you know, it's not as tight as it
should be. Happens over here too, though.
But it's free and everyone's entitled to the same thing, which is a great thing, I think.
I wonder also too. I mean, you're looking at it through the prism of moving to Los Angeles, especially like an urban part of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Dealing with medical stuff around here, it's way harder than it might even be in other parts of the States, because this is so overpopulated.
Yeah.
I mean, doing anything here, it's just harder. It's so much harder. You go to an emergency room or urgent care in Los Angeles area, and it's almost like someone's doing a prank show. You know, unless you have a bullet wound in your neck, you're not seeing a doctor for a long, long, long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's true.
So. What about like just your childhood? What about, you know, I'm sure growing up, now did you grow up in London?
Yeah.
And you, I'm sure, had the ability to go pretty much wherever you wanted as a young kid, right?
I mean, well, it was kind of, you know, it was kind of the opposite. You know, in London, it's kind of like New York. Like you couldn't really play out in the street. You know, you'd have to drive to the park or something with your family. But when you're kind of 15, 16, you'd get on the tube.
Yeah.
The tube, which is the subway. And that kind of gives you a bit of freedom. But it's kind of, you know, I think it's the same in most big cities. And that is, those kind of days of playing in the streets are gone, really, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and also just even now, I feel like I was reading a book that was talking about how, like, kids can't even just go to the park and at least here in Los Angeles, you know, or in the United States, have a pickup game of softball because people are so scared of getting sued. I mean, there's so much liability. Recess has changed for kids at school.
But the number of times I fell off of equipment on the playground and hit my head.
And we didn't have any of those spongy surfaces when I was a kid. It was concrete.
Exactly. That's why I don't know what NHS stands for.
You're adding more things to be scared of for me. kids.
To get back to what we were saying about just enjoy brunch, which is very real, because all of that personal stuff and those like bits and pieces of your day that you enjoy to just do stuff that luxurious things.
Yeah.
It goes away. It really goes away. And we only have one child, Bianca and I. I imagine what it must be like for numerous child families and things like that. But I like it better. I like it better than when I used to have lots of time on my hands. I really do. I like, because every time I get 15 minutes to read a book, or if Bianca and I once a week get to watch a half hour television show,
Tosh,
we love it. Like we love that one episode of Tosh. Bianca and I, it's like
it's heaven.
It's like drink. Yeah, it's truly like manna from heaven. And I never appreciated stuff like that before. Yeah. I never did. I never appreciated leisure time in my life until
showers feel until so good now.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Going to the gym. I go to the gym every time I'm in the gym. I train like I'm preparing for the Olympics.
No, it's true. You work so much harder. What's that phrase? What's the saying? There's a saying about like if you need something done, give it to a busy person, right? It's like you just end up so much more focused because you don't have the time to screw around. You just get it done.
I'm definitely...
You don't lose hours or 2 hours on Facebook just
messing around. No.
That stuff doesn't make sense to me anymore. It doesn't. And I'm not saying that like because I'm so worldly now. I've only been a parent for under a year. But the idea of mindless time... I don't comprehend it because when I'm not at work, I want to devote as much time as I can to my child. And when my child's asleep and Bianca isn't, you know, just pulled 90 ways from, 90 different directions.
Sounds like 50 Shades of Grey.
That's right. you really do. You start to like value doing stuff.
All that stuff. I mean, I think all that stuff obviously is daunting and you don't have any clue until you actually have the child. But that stuff's fine. You know, giving up the spare time and that's fine. It's the having moved here.
Yeah, it's a support system.
The support system and the medical staff and not knowing the school system here at all. Those kind of things for me personally are the intimidating thing.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, honestly, there's so much that you rely on. I mean, the good thing for you guys is you got us.
Yeah.
I mean, your network in the show at least is built in a little bit. And there's at least two couples here who have gone into that dark night. It's all of the things that you don't even think about that you start to realize, like, just even when you have a simple question about something, you know, and the questions come up all the time. I mean, every day I feel like we actually pay a special fee to our doctor where we can like text him 24/7. And I was really not sure if we should do it, you know, the extra expense.
It's a really good idea.
And then we did it. And I swear to God, for the first year, it's the best thing ever because I don't feel guilty about every other day if I just text him and say, like, what if she's making this noise? And today's technology, I like snap a video of her doing it. I send it to him.
Oh my gosh,
it's crazy.
What a great way to make money.
That's good.
A doctor.
I know.
What an easy way to make money.
And
they could just Google it while they're there on another phone.
And he's lucky because he's funny and cool. Like, I wouldn't be so into the idea of Bianca and I having this nonstop connection with our baby doctor if it wasn't for that. He's really funny.
He loves Mike.
Oh, I bet.
Make terrible fart humor all the time.
Oh my God.
It's a good
one. And he can tell you medically about what the functions of farts and...
Yeah.
I cannot wait till Magnolia's in high school. She's going to just be constantly embarrassed by you.
Yeah. I worry about that.
Or they'll be like co-partners in crime.
For sure.
I mean,
I think
that was my worst nightmare.
I worry about that too. And more so, not co-partners in crime. It's how can I sincerely discipline my daughter for doing something that I really think is funny?
That happens. When you figure that out, please share it with me because every day Sabrina does something and I will tell her no and I will try and give her the stare down and she gets this twinkle in her eye.
She knows you're laughing. Yeah.
And I can't help it and I have to turn away. I have to turn away, but it doesn't, I cannot just like lay down the law.
I remember Johnny Knoxville talking about how he had a real problem with his older daughter. She's got to be like 18 now, but you know, when Jackass was really exploding, she was in great junior high school, and he said, I really have to get to the point where I'm pulling my hair out because how can I yell at my daughter for disciplinary reasons when she knows I make a living getting kicked in the balls? You know,
Where do I draw that line?
That's a tough nut to crack.
As parents, if they do something they shouldn't be doing, pretending to be annoyed. When you're not really, but you're just pretending to be annoyed for the sake of discipline.
Well, Magnolia's still too young for her to, like, I mean, she doesn't even understand no yet, really. I mean, I think she's starting to kind of get, like, somewhat of an idea about it, but, so we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree with Mike. It's like, I get mad at Mike instead of getting mad at Magnolia. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Magnolia does something that is inconvenient or that is tiresome or whatever. It's like, I end up taking it out on him and I'm trying to be better about that.
Mike.
I know.
I'm used to it.
You've got it tough, man.
No, I don't. I have a sweet life, but she had been doing that before Magnolia was born. So, like when her sister
like if the
would
dogs
come,
were doing
no,
something.
Like when her family of origin would come to visit from the Pacific, and they would
family
frustrate
of
her.
Origin
when they would frustrate her, I would get
you
yelled
get the
at
brunt.
Always,
yeah.
Regardless.
Well, you know, Live and learn. What do you think you're going to have first, boy or girl? Just gut check.
If you have a girl, they have huge vaginas. And it, like...
It, seriously, when they come out, their vaginas are enormous.
What?
No, it's really swollen.
Super swollen. But they just seem big for a long time, don't they? Every time you wipe, you're
That was the only question I ever asked our doctor. Bianca had a list of all these... I was like, is your vagina ever going to get small? Because right now...
Like
massive beef curtains.
Like honestly, the beef curtains. I was like, I got a little. I was like, I feel so bad for her. If this is what her life is going to be like,
I didn't realize you went down these roads with this podcast.
No, that's what.
Oh,
I listened to one, and you were talking about being on a plane with the kids, and it was so kind of nice. And
listen, what anytime Mike's involved in it, it starts to go down. Okay, but Ellie will probably make us edit it out.
No, I promise I won't. No, I won't.
About the giant. Baby
no,
vaginas.
But it's a thing.
You should write the boys
get the little baby boners all the time.
Yeah. It doesn't stop. Yeah.
And the boys pee all over you, which is
Magnolia peed on Bianca last night for the first time. Really? Real pee on her?
Like I picked her up and was carrying her to her bath naked, and I felt all of this wetness, and I was like, looked down, she peed all over me.
I think it might be a freedom thing. Lauren's nephew does it when you take their diaper off.
Yeah.
It's also a chilly thing, right?
Maybe it's just kind
it's
of
chilly.
Like,
there's a breeze. I'm going to pee.
Oh, not a bad point. I was going in the direction of eat hot peppers.
I was thinking the country. I was like, chilly. Ellie, wow, world traveler. What did they do in Santiago?
Nobody understands me.
I dodged pee from 4 feet away over Christmas.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
That was when you were working with R. Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. All right, guys, we're back. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you enjoyed our little discussions with the boys from Undateable. Undateable, of course, coming back March 17th on NBC after The Voice. We're going to have Mike do a dad session.
Yeah, this is so great. I can't wait to hear what it is.
So what's your dad session for all the dads out there?
I would say the most valuable thing to me as a father right now has been having a guy body. And that's because when I hold my daughter, she's almost forced to like kind of lay her head on my shoulders. You know, if like you have a man's, you're a little bit more broad shouldered and you have more like a upper chest and less booby than a woman. So when she's held by Bianca, she holds her body differently. So when I go for a walk with her, instead of putting her in her stroller, now I just like carrying her around the house or carrying her on walks because she kind of has to grab onto me. It's almost like front way piggyback, and I really like that.
There's nothing better than a man's broad shoulder.
Oh, that's so sweet. What about really mom sweet. Bomb?
Okay, I've got a mom bomb. It is honor the space between no longer and not yet. And that is Nancy Levin.
No longer and not yet. That's like the
honor the space between no longer and not yet.
In meditation, they say that's the space between the inhale and the exhale. You guys, we love you. Thank you for listening.
This was a really fun one.
It was a fun one. I feel like it was it was an interesting viewpoint from the
boys. And I didn't even have
a
voice, and it was fun.
And guys, trust in your goodness.
Live out your greatness.
And rock on.
Atomic Moms.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen.
Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.